and welcome to Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? I'm Annie.
And I'm Dave. Each month we take it in turns to nominate a film, a TV show or book we were a fan of before we were married and the other one doesn't really know.
Then we both watch or read it and come together to discuss our reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers.
So, today's episode we are covering North and South, the story of two young men in the, what would the date be? I don't know. Mid-19th century?
Yes. The first episode is 1842 to 1844.
And they head off to West Point to become proper young men, but they are from very different parts of American, what would be contemporary society for them. So, how did we get to this point? Why'd you pick it?
Well, people who have listened to the previous episode will know that we trailed that we were going to do Black Sails with our local Quizmaster Jack. That unfortunately has not thus far occurred.
See, I wasn't even going to bring it up. I was going to, you know, assume that our readers weren't necessarily that astute and hadn't been paying attention.
Wow, harsh. yes, so that may or may not occur. Yes, listeners. So we had to come up with something else, and it was my turn. And something, I can't remember, but something made me think of this TV show recently. And it had been on the list for a long time, but I thought now would be the time to revisit it. So what were your thoughts overall? Had you seen it before?
Yes, but I mean, I couldn't remember anything about it. I couldn't even remember who was in it or anything about the story. I have a vague, tenuous memory of an episode at some point where the family of one side takes in a wounded soldier from the other side and looks after them, but that's
really... Yeah, well, that would be till season two.
Yeah, I can't remember anything apart from that. But, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's
good.
It's a slow burn. It's got lots of interesting stuff about the politics and history that were going on at the time.
Mm.
It's definitely a product of the 80s.
Yes.
Everything from the awesome hair through to the way it's shot and lots of different things. I think it raises a lot of interesting questions for the show, particularly one of the things that I would like to talk about later on is what it must have been like to be one of the black actors in the show.
Yes.
I think it would be really interesting. But yeah, I thought it was good. So what did you think, having not watched it in many years?
Many, many years. I don't know when I watched it originally, because it came out in 1985 when I was seven. So I couldn't have watched it at that point, because it's definitely not a kid's show. I remember watching it as a teenager and finding it difficult to pick who I preferred out of Patrick Swayze as Ori or James Reed as George.
Patrick Swayze with the hair.
Oh, awesome hair.
That hair is doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah, and I'm here for it. Yes, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would for some reason. For some reason, I was worried that it might not hold up, but I thought it was actually really good.
Yes, I also enjoyed it. The only downside is the episodes are each an hour and a half long.
Yes, I mean, Slow Burn is right. I remembered it being sort of maybe one or two shorter episodes leading up to the war, and then most of it being the war. But the whole of the first season is the 19 years before the war, and then the second season is the American Civil War itself. So there was an awful lot more preamble than I remembered.
Yeah, it was interesting because I can only presume that they must have known they were going to get season two when they started.
Yeah, they must have done.
Obviously, a lot of money's been spent on the show, because one of the things that I really want to pick out is, and we'll come to facts in a minute, but they got nominated for a lot of awards, but the only award that they won was for costumes.
Costumes, yeah.
And what I wanted to say was that I thought that the costumes, the vehicles, the props especially, are just immaculate. The amount of attention to detail is just
and all the sets and houses. Sets, and...
Yeah, yeah. It's just it looks great. I mean, okay, it looks like an 80s show because it's shot with 80s lighting and cameras, but they've obviously got a bunch of good historians in and made
high
production values, made it very mm-hmm. accurate is the thing that I was really impressed by.
Do you want to do a brief plot synopsis for anyone who hasn't seen it?
Sure.
Because there is a 2004 miniseries also called North and South.
There are actually several miniseries. Oh, okay. I got confused briefly on IMDb when I was trying to look up something before the show. And it turns out that there was a British series called North and South, which was North of England versus South of England people. And I got really confused for a minute before I managed to find the right show.
That might be the 2004 one. I don't know. I need to watch that because it's got Richard Armitage in it. So, yay.
Ooh.
He played Thorin in the Hobbit movies.
Oh, him.
Yes.
Also good hair.
Very good hair.
Yeah.
Anyway, plot synopsis. Do you have one?
So, dear listeners, I am trying to be more eco-friendly by not printing out my notes for this episode. So I read them instead on my phone. So if there's any moments where I'm going, it's because I'm frantically scrolling up and down trying to find the right bit of my notes.
I'm not sure our production values are going to hold up.
No, quite. So it's the story of two people and by extension two families, Ori
Main
and
George Hazard.
I always get Dukes of every time
his
name comes up. It's just,
oh dear,
yeah, because you know they're also, I can say good old boys, but no, he's from the north and Ori's from the south.
Yes George is from Philadelphia,
yes,
and Ori is from South Carolina,
yes, near Charleston,
yes.
And these two young men, we'll come to that, these two men head off to West Point. And one of the things I'd also like to dig into that I find very interesting is that Ori doesn't want to be a soldier.
No.
So Ori goes to West Point because
for the education.
It's the way to become an educated and well-respected young man, because mm-hmm. America at this point doesn't have a lot in the way of universities, and the ones that do exist are very hard to get into and very expensive. And so one of the options is to go to West Point, whereas George has always wanted to be a soldier.
Which confuses me, because his very first introduction is very much as a dandy with a really floofy shirt and a woman on each arm in an open-topped carriage with really fancy clothes. And I'm like, career soldier, really?
Well, I... Imminent sidetrack. But I've just finished reading Vanity Fair, which is set 30 years earlier, maybe, in the UK. And a lot of the people who are in the army are also fashion victims, essentially.
Oh, true. Yeah, no, that's
so
a good point.
So it was,
good
you
point.
Know, a thing that those two things aren't necessarily mutually exclusive.
Anyway.
So, but yes, but we also have their extended families. So Ori's family owns a slave plantation in the south, and they grow cotton. And Ori really wants to modernise the farm, but his father's very resistant and is very keen to keep things as they've always have been. I'm sure we'll get into a discussion of slavery and
yes,
especially
difficult to avoid,
especially the show's portrayal of that later on and the different characters' attitudes to it. And George's family owns a very modern ironworks, which produces things for steamships and railways
and farm machinery
and presumably stuff for the war
eventually, yeah.
And so they both come from quite affluent backgrounds, but one is through the modern production of machinery and one is through a reliance on slave labour.
Yes.
Yes. And they both go off to West Point. Various hilarity ensues as they are put through various hazing and trials. And that's basically the first episode. And we get, eventually, they, you know, become fast friends, but end up on opposite sides of the war in season two.
Well, it's also quite important that on his way to West Point, when he first leaves home, Ori comes across a young lady in a difficult situation when her carriage has crashed and rescues her, and there is instant attraction and even kissing within the first half hour.
Oh gosh, he sticks her on his horse and carries her off
to where she was going.
To where she was going. I mean, he says, "Don't worry, I'll send somebody back with another carriage to go and pick up your servants. I'm like, you could have just left her there as well, but no, he sticks her on a horse and carries off. And as you say, within like half an hour of their meeting, he's handing her down from the horse, and then there's smooching.
And he asks her to write to him at West Point.
Yes.
And then her father interferes with the correspondence, so both of them think that the other one has stopped writing back. And she is married off to the seasoned bad guy, David Carradine's character.
Oh, that's David Carradine.
Yeah, David Carradine.
I knew David Carradine was in it, but he's the bad guy. It is, isn't
and,
it?
And wow. Ori only finds out at the wedding after the deed has been done.
It's phenomenal.
And so there is doom.
It's phenomenal
romantic
timing.
Doom.
Because he like rocks up just at the moment when she's saying "I do," and if you know he'd rocked up an hour beforehand, then it would all have been off and would all have been very different.
Well, exactly. Well, I don't know that her father would have liked it very much. But anyway, so there's a whole romantic subplot going on.
See, it's very interesting. There may be, and apologies if this becomes a thing, there may be quite a bunch of references to Vanity Fair, but there is a character in that who lives at home with her father because her father says, "I will not allow you to marry because I want somebody who will be here to look after me in my old age." And so he says, "If you leave and get married, I'll cut you off and not give you any money." And so when you said that, you know, I don't think her father would necessarily like it, if Rory turned up and the whole wedding would get called off, I wonder if she would have been disowned.
Well, quite possibly.
But, you know, Ori's family has money, or at least has...
Yes, but the father obviously disapproves, otherwise
for now.
He wouldn't have interfered with the...
True. I mean, maybe because... I was going to say maybe because he was Southern, but they're both Southern.
Yeah.
I find it very interesting how much knowledge of American geography and history it assumes the viewer's got. Because they meet a whole load of characters at West Point and they'll go, "Oh, I'm from Georgia, I'm from Ohio, I'm from such and such a place." And you're meant to instantly understand which side they're
most,
on.
Yeah, most American viewers are going to know which states were in the North and which states were in the South in the war.
Probably.
But, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, I don't know.
I mean, it's an interesting question, isn't it?
Okay, so facts...
Ah, right.
It's got all the people. I mean, there were three seasons. There was the 1985 season, which is the 20 years before the war. The 1986 season, which was the war itself.
Can I just jump in? Because I don't remember...
Sure.
I don't remember what that looked like, but...
What looked like?
What the 1986 season looked like. I must have watched it, because...
I remember things that happened during the war episodes.
But my point is that... Both the main two actors look too old to go to West Point.
Yes. Well, they were both 33 at the time that it was...
What's Patrick Swayze's? 33?
Yeah.
Wow. So so Patrick Swayze looks in his early 20s to me, and the other guy...
James Reed.
Looks 33.
They were both about the same age.
But this is what I find humorous, is that... James Reed looks so much older than Patrick Swayze to me.
Yes, agreed.
Because you were saying the second series was in 1986, but set the better part of 20 years later.
Yeah.
I find that interesting in two ways. First of all, that the characters would have to suddenly look 20 years older.
No, the first season covers the 20 years prior to the war. So there is progression, and they are aged up.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that in the second season,
they
would have filmed it only 1 year later, but the characters have to look 20 years older.
No, because across the whole of the first season, that is the 20 years. So the end of the first season is the start of the war.
They would have to
be aged 20 years over the course of the first season, not suddenly jump from one season to the other.
They'd have to look 20 years older than they did in the episode that I watched.
Yes.
Right.
And also the fact that when the war starts, they're both must be 40. character-wise.
Yes, so that's...
Which is really interesting.
Yeah, so that
it
is...
really surprised me when I looked it up, because I, as I say, I thought it was just... It was set, you know, a couple, 5 years maybe before the war started, and that was covered in the first couple of episodes, and the rest of it was all the war, but I was completely wrong. And then the third season, I think that fans probably try and pretend it doesn't exist, because that was made in 1994, and it all went horribly awry, as far as I could tell from looking on Wikipedia.
So... having read the plot synopsis for the third season, it just goes horribly wrong. Lots of the main characters get killed off either before the show even starts or on camera, and it's all just very unpleasant. James Reeve, who...
Reed.
Thank you. James Reeve is somebody I know. Hello, if you're listening. Unlike Patrick Swayze, didn't really go off and do very much. So I think he probably jumped at the chance of coming back and doing this again. And yeah, it all went horribly wrong.
But across the three seasons, it's got everybody in it. Patrick Swayze, Kirstie Alley, Gene Kelly, Robert Mitchum, Elizabeth Taylor, David Carradine, Johnny Cash, Jonathan Frakes, Peter O'Toole. I mean, there's like everybody.
Peter O'Toole's in season 3. So you're not going to see him if you don't watch that one. Yes. As you say, guest characters, Elizabeth Taylor, wow.
Yeah.
Robert Mitchum. Johnny Cash plays John Brown, which I would really, really like to see.
Mm-hmm.
Because John Brown is a fascinating character. So they're going to do Harper's Ferry, which is where John Brown makes his stand.
Okay.
With the escaped slaves. And that's... I know that's going to be part of the show at some point.
Hmm.
So that's going to be super interesting. So I'm really looking forward to that. But they've also got, I kind of pronounced this guy's name properly, Robert
Guillaume.
Oh, thank you. As Frederick Douglass. And Frederick Douglass is another really...
And you know Robert Guillaume from...
I know the name, but I can't think of where from. But Frederick Douglass is a really fascinating historical character, and I would love to see him being portrayed, so I'm very very keen to see that at some point. So, yes, they have, as you say, all the people. Do you know anything about the writer?
No. I did read the books.
Oh, there's books?
There are books.
Oh, were they first?
Yes, yeah, it's based on the books.
Okay. So the show was put together, the show was put together by a guy called John Jakes, and he wrote a lot of different stuff, but he was mainly known for being one of the people in a group called the Swordsmen and Sorcerers Guild of America, who were trying to legitimise science fiction fantasy writing in the 60s, I think, when it was still like, you know, astounding stories. You know, when people thought of this kind of stuff, they thought of, you know, people in rubber suits abducting women kind of on the cover of...
Are you sure you've got the right name? Because he's the author of the books.
Oh, sorry, that's the author of the books. My apologies. Yes, sorry. But yes, he and a bunch of other people were trying to legitimise that kind of writing, which is obviously very different to the show that we've watched.
Yeah, and very different to his most famous books.
And I just thought that it was interesting that he was trying to make that more of a serious and properly accepted genre.
Mm,
sorry, you're right. That was right to the books. The main writer of the show, there was a writer's room, there are various people. But the main writer of the show was somebody called Patricia Green. And she wrote most of Cagney and Lacey.
Oh, wow.
She wrote a thing called China Beach, which was... MASH, which we've done previously, but for the Vietnam War.
Okay.
So it was a Mobile Army Surgical Hospital in the Vietnam War.
Wow.
Won many, many awards.
Interesting.
And a large amount of LA Law.
Okay. Well, the first series of this remains, apparently, the 7th highest rated TV miniseries in history.
Oh, yes. Yes, I did read that. It was produced by a guy called David Wolper, who did Roots, which is also about slavery, The Thornbirds, which is another period TV drama, but also did the films Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and LA Confidential.
Okay, that's quite a contrast.
Those are quite the contrast.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Interesting career.
He was also responsible for and won many awards for designing the opening and closing ceremonies for the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles.
Wow. Okay. Fair enough.
So, yeah.
It was obviously quite a close-knit set because there were four marriages amongst cast and crew.
Oh, yes.
Over the course of the seasons. The guy, James Reed, who played George, married the actress who played his wife on the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's nice.
Yeah.
We haven't met her yet.
No. Oh, she's not in the first episode.
Okay.
So, yeah. Any other facts you've got?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Oh, there is one. We might do it when we come to characters. But this was just before, like 6 months before Dirty Dancing came out.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
He looks younger. He looks so much younger in this than in Dirty Dancing.
Mm. So what's really interesting is that if someone said to me Patrick Swayze, I would immediately think Dirty Dancing was his big break. But now I wonder whether being really well known, because this show was very, very popular when it came out. Was the reason why Dirty Dancing was popular? Was because people knew him from this and thought,
maybe.
I know that guy from that TV show, I'll go and see that film that he's in.
Yeah, maybe.
So maybe it was actually that way round.
Could happen, yes. Good point.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I guess probably the main thing to talk about is the whole slavery thing, because
I was going to say it's interesting because it is related to slavery, but it's interesting that in the series we're going to get in season two a portrayal of two different sets of people fighting each other, and it's trying to articulate that two people who were very good friends ended up on different sides of the war.
Yes.
But what doesn't really work for me, or that's not necessarily true, the show introduces quite a lot of nuance, which I really like.
Yes, that surprised me, actually.
But what's interesting is that Ori, who's effectively the character that represents the South of the slave owners, isn't a typical Southern slave owner.
Well, this is my point.
He doesn't like slavery. That's what I was about slavery. To
mention.
And... Yeah.
Well,
we, with only one exception in the show, always see slaves as being treated really well all the time, apart from one bit where Ori stops the new overseer who's his father's put in charge while he's been at West Point.
You were saying the show only ever shows that. No, that's not true.
In this episode?
Yeah, because David Carradine's character is determined as evil by him berating and slapping Nancy.
Yeah, there is that.
When she spills the tea.
Yes, you're right, there is.
So there's a lot of distinctions. So the show works incredibly hard because you've got Ori, who's from the South, and you've got George from the North, and they are the two main protagonists, and obviously they're going to be on opposite sides of the war. But the show works incredibly hard in the first episode to present them both in as sympathetic a way as possible. So you're meant to like Ori, despite the fact that he is from the South and thus owns slaves. But it doesn't shy away from the fact that he is part of a slave-owning family, because pretty much everybody that he meets outside of the South, once he moves north to go to West Point, brings it up almost immediately. They know where he's from.
So it's...
But he does say on the train to West Point that a lot of people in the South think that slavery is outdated and that there are issues and that things need to change. But then he's obviously on the southern side in the war.
What is interesting about this point in American history is that despite the fact that the Northerners are fighting against slavery, I mean, heaven knows I don't know enough detail of American history, because many people in America, especially people in the South, will say it was never about slavery, it was about economics. And people will say, well, the North didn't want the war because they actively wanted to end slavery. They wanted the war because they wanted the South to stop from seceding, which is a very different thing. People in the north who were kind of notionally sort of fighting to get rid of slavery, the vast, vast, vast majority of people in the north were still extremely racist.
Oh, yeah, I expect so.
So, not just like, you know, subtly, but really overtly believed that black people were inherently inferior and would be, you know, absolutely mortified about them, you know, marrying their daughter or being in a position of authority or, you know, doing any of these kind of things. So when somebody like Ori says, I don't like the idea of slavery, I think it's outdated, he's not saying, I think, you know, black people are equals and should be treated like anybody else.
No.
But that's not portrayed.
Yes. I mean, as I say, it's working quite hard to make him sympathetic, because I found interesting was that quite a few people on originally discovering where he's from immediately start laying into him about the whole slavery issue.
So
are presented as being overly aggressive and unnecessarily antagonistic and portrayed in a bad light.
So some are and some aren't. And that's some of the really nice nuance about the show. It's very well written. So Kirstie Alley plays George's sister.
Yeah.
And she's a hardcore abolitionist.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really interesting about her is she's not hardcore abolitionist because of any view of, you know, the rights of man or this kind of stuff, but because she is somehow from somewhere picked it up as a religious thing. For her, it's about a religious calling, almost, that God says people must be equal and slavery is against God's will. And that's her driving force, not, you know, in a Thomas Paine kind of way, all people should be equal.
Yeah.
And what's interesting for that is, again, with my rather limited knowledge of American history, that's also my feeling about John Brown and about Harper's Ferry, is that he's doing it because he is religiously fervent. He's driven for that reason. And so that's interesting. The other person that they meet who immediately, to start with, takes a dislike to Ori is their roommate at West Point.
Ned.
And the reason why he is against the South and against people owning slaves is not because he's believes that black people should be free, but because slaves aren't paid, the farmers in the north are really struggling to make a living because they have to pay their workers, and so it's economically really hard to compete with the things that they grow versus things grown in the south, where the work is done by people who aren't paid.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, it's purely an economic reason why he hates the south,
absolutely.
Not because of
which
people's
is interesting.
Rights. So while we're doing all of this, one of the things that I thought was really interesting is the very first thing that I wrote down is there's a black character in Ori's household called Mom Sally. Who's...
No, that's Madeline's free servant. Then she's not one of the slaves at the main plantation. Mom Sally is Madeline's is.
So who chastises that? So Ori's got two much, much younger sisters who are like 7 or 8. And so who's the person who chastises them right at the start?
Somebody else.
Oh, I thought it was Mom Sally.
No, it's one of the house slaves.
I thought that was really interesting that you've got a slave woman in the house who's allowed to have a go at the children
Different
household.
People had very different relationships with their slaves.
Mm.
And also within households, there was a really strict hierarchy between house slaves and field slaves.
Mm.
And then Madeline's family it doesn't categorically say that they don't have slaves, but Mom Sally is a free woman.
Yes, so it's interesting, again, you've got free slaves working and presumably being paid for in the house. And the relationship between them and the other slaves. And, of course, freed slaves own slaves.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's incredibly complicated.
Incredibly complicated.
What's the film that I'm trying to think of that came out a few years ago, Quentin Tarantino?
Oh, Django Unchained.
Mm. It makes me think that maybe I should watch that.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
Anyway, going back to my original point.
Sorry.
About the people who are antagonistic towards Ori being presented as not that great. The first time it comes up is when he's attempting to find the station to get the train to West Point, and he's set upon by Irish immigrants, working class dock workers, essentially.
Are we going to talk about that and the immigration stuff now or later?
We can do. But so they're, you know, they try and extort money out of him to take his case to the station, and then end up in a massive fight, which is how Ori and George meet, because George leaps in to defend Ori from his attackers.
For a dandy young man growing up in the north, he does seem to enjoy being punched in the face.
Yeah. But then Virgilia, his sister, who is also very antagonistic towards Ori with her religious calling against slavery, is massively disparaged by both her older brothers, one of whom is George.
And the other one is
Jonathan Frakes.
Jonathan Frakes!
And is really amazing. Disapproved of and shouted down by her parents at the dinner table. So,
yes,
whilst her views may be presented as being potentially good, she's portrayed as being going too far with it.
Well, I'll say three things. First of all, you don't insult your guests at the dinner table, even if you don't agree with them.
Well, yes, this is my
point. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I can't remember the third thing now. But the second thing the second thing was that the way that she talks about it is overly strident and based in
that was
religion.
My point.
Yes. So.
So the anti-slavery people who present those views are set, obviously, against our incredibly beautiful hero that we want to sympathise with, and also presented as being overly aggressive about it.
What the show is saying...
Because it's trying to, you know, provide some kind of a balanced view.
Yeah. So what the show is doing, I'm trying to think of a modern-day example. So if you had, and I'm going to pick America because it's a place that has more obvious divides, that if you had somebody who is very pro-guns and somebody who wants to ban all guns, being able to work on a project completely unrelated to that kind of thing and saying, look, we obviously have an opinion difference about this, we're just going to agree to disagree and not talk about it and collaborate and work together on this other thing that we're doing. And we might go, I can see how people might be able to do that. But it feels, in our contemporary society, so incredibly different from being able to go to a place and say, oh, I see you own slaves. And I think slavery is terrible, but let's just agree to disagree, and that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's so absolutely incredibly different.
Yeah, which is why they but have to what? Say that they have to have Ori say that he disagrees with it, but that it's really complicated, and they can't just, you know, abolish it. And he wants to make changes, but he doesn't have the power to do so. So it almost the show almost ties itself up in knots to make him a sympathetic character as a slave owner.
Yes. So what's again, this makes me, I was going to say read a book, but listeners, let's face it, won't look for a video on YouTube, is to understand the economics of the end of the war. Because come the Emancipation Proclamation, what happens to all the southern plantation owners who suddenly, A, have lost a vast amount of their actual wealth because your value of your slaves has suddenly disappeared, and therefore your actual wealth, your ability to borrow money is always based on the amount of wealth that you have, your collateral, and if half your collateral ceases to exist because they're now been emancipated, how do you do anything?
Well, that is one of the points that the show is making, that it's more complicated than just going.
So,
from a moral standpoint, obviously, slavery is bad and should be abolished, but you can't just dismantle it in a day.
But what I find interesting is that if you went to Ori, he would say, slavery is bad, not necessarily because, you know, black people should be freed and, you know, it's a morality thing, but because it's just an inefficient way of mm-hmm. doing stuff. He wants to mechanize the farm, by which I mean he wants to use steam power to do a create a mill that, so instead of what was happening a lot during this time period, the raw cotton being sent from the south to the north to be processed.
Yeah.
He wants to process it down south. And his mm-hmm. father's like, we've always done it this way, we're not going to do anything any different.
Yeah.
So if you went to Ori, never mind his father, and said, we're going to free all the slaves, he'd be like, oh my God, you know,
how is that going to work?
How is that going to work for us? We'd be, you know, thrown out on the street and be penniless. But also, there's, in my head, if you emancipate all the slaves overnight, nobody can employ them because there's not enough money.
Yeah, so there's nowhere for them to
go. There's nowhere for them to go either.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and what you end up after the war, and I just say, again, my knowledge of history is very poor, but I do know that for a long time, for several decades after the war, most of the people who'd been slaves became sharecroppers, which is effectively you are free but you are still tied to the land and the wage that you are paid
living in poverty
is based on
the, one of the points that Ori makes when he visits the steelworks is that the slaves on his family plantation live in better conditions than the workers at the factory, at the Hazard factory.
So it's particularly to do with immigration.
Yeah.
So what happens is you've got lots of waves of people coming from, at this point, Ireland and Italy. Ireland because of the potato famine, which is a huge historical impact event. I was about to go off an enormous tangent. Essentially, if the British government hadn't said that they would rather let the Irish starve than give them any money, then the Irish wouldn't have gone to America, and America would have been very different and a whole lot of stuff.
Mm.
But those various ways of immigrants were in, as you say, conditions that were almost, I think to say they were more poorly treated than slaves is really a stretch. Perhaps on Ori's plantation, but Ori's plantation is not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No.
Not normal.
Absolutely. There's a very hard line drawn between the good slave owners and the bad slave owners, as it were.
Yeah. But yes, there's certainly an interesting comparison because, again, with the nuance about the economics, what Ori says is your factory workers are living in poorer conditions than the slaves that we own. And George says, but at least ours can, you know, get up and go somewhere else.
They have choice.
If they can find a better job, they can just go to it. And Ori effectively says, yes, but because everybody pays the same appallingly low wage,
they don't actually have a choice.
The reality is they can't actually do that.
Yeah.
And so, it's just a really interesting comparison.
Yeah. So as you say, there's an awful lot more nuance and discussion of that kind of thing than I expected.
So I want to talk about briefly something that I don't think are going to be able to properly talk about at all.
Okay.
Because we're a couple of middle-aged, slightly creaky white people sitting on a sofa, and what I'm interested in is what it must be like to be a black actor or actress being in the show.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, that must be the case for a lot of these kinds of stories, but more modern tellings of this era probably have an awful lot more people of colour in, like, the production and the direction and the crew and the decision-making, whereas this, other than, you know, a fair few extras and a couple of named characters is almost 100% white. And
I mean, there's going to be a lot more important black principal characters as the show
later on. Absolutely.
Not just historical figures, but characters that come into the show. But I literally can't imagine what it must be like as a black actor in the States playing a slave. Because that's, you know, it is your own personal history, and it's not that many, you know, generations ago.
Yeah,
and I don't know how. I can't begin to think how it must be like to do
that. The other thing, which is very tangentially connected to that, is there's a scene at West Point where the stereotypical evil drill master picks Ori and George out for being insubordinate and makes them march on the spot whilst holding buckets of water at shoulder height, which you told me was a thing
yes.
that happened at West Point.
Yes. So but... I found it really interesting because I know very little about, well, I'll tell you like the two or three things I know about West Point in a minute, but that's one of the things that particular punishment is really well known.
But what I found really interesting is that the specific marching style that he teaches them is the goose step.
Yeah.
Which, whilst that may be historically accurate, mm-hmm. that that's what they were doing,
yeah.
in the 80s would mm-hmm. be massively associated with the Nazis.
Yeah. I mean,
and I find it interesting that it's included in this thing, which is obviously set much before that, but
yeah.
not that long after the war.
Well, 40 years.
40 years, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That they're still including that as yeah. as the style of yeah, marching yeah. that they're taught to do.
I mean, I have no idea, but I suspect it's hundreds and hundreds of years old.
Oh, I'm sure it's historically accurate, but I found it an interesting choice to include that.
Yes, it's an interesting choice.
Because it must have been a choice in the 80s.
That. Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
West Point is interesting because, again, with the nuance.
Mm.
There's the one very mean drill instructor, but I mean, he's just not. Drill instructors are often portrayed as being mean, but in a way that is, quotes, good in order to, you know,
toughen you up
as the soldiers. Yeah. Whereas this person's just
evil.
Just.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bit strong.
He's, yeah.
Whereas there are also, you know, good people who are there as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that the hero presented upperclassman who rescues them from that situation is Ulysses S. Grant.
Was it?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, he's name dropped as Ulysses S. Grant.
I did not spot that.
Yeah, commonly known as Sam. Yes, he is the upperclassman who protects them from Corporal Bent.
I did not know.
So he
that.
Is obviously
Amazing.
A very famous figure in yes. the Civil War on
yes.
the southern side.
Yes.
And his introduction in the series mm-hmm. is really positive.
Okay.
So I found that really interesting. There's obviously more connection with him and Ori during the war years later on.
I did not spot that.
Yeah. Because he is not now, I would imagine, viewed in a particularly positive light for many reasons.
That's difficult to tell.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things, and again, everything I know about history I learned from 5-minute YouTube videos, but it's really interesting that a significant number of politicians who were part of the Confederacy after the end of the war became politicians in the United States government.
Okay.
Quite a lot of them. And I believe generals that were in the Southern Army became senior leaders in the United States Army following the war.
Okay, yeah.
So, because, you know, you have to have people that have got a certain level of experience. And for politicians, you've got to have people that are respected by their locals. You can't turn up and stick, you know, somebody from the north in to go and rule Charleston. It's not going to work.
Fair.
So I don't know what happened to Grant after the war, but it's a very interesting question. I found it interesting that Ori and George have, by the end of the episode, 150 demerits, which feels like a huge number.
Yeah, apparently they would get kicked out if they got more than 200 in 1 year.
Yeah, but I mean, 150 is like one every other day.
Yeah, that's a good point.
For like the entire year.
Yes.
But one of the other things I know about West Point was, again, one of these YouTube video history shorts about a bunch of drunk West Point cadets who end up taking over one of the buildings for some reason and having a whole thing with the leadership there and threatening to shoot people and stuff. So, you know, so it's made up, made out as being, you know, this incredibly
prestigious and respected
thing
institution,
there.
Yeah.
Whereas, certainly at the time, people got drunk a lot and did a lot of things they probably shouldn't have been doing. One of the things that I find interesting in the present day is that the, again, limited, again, only by watching and reading stuff on the internet, mm-hmm. people I know that have been in the American army as ordinary soldiers have incredible respect for West Point people. They all say that they are
interesting,
very, very, that they're not stuck up.
Okay.
And that they are very respectful of the lower ranks, and they're very good at what they do.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Well, I know it has a good reputation.
There's lots of encouraging people to go to West Point if you're good enough to get in.
What else you got?
What else have I got?
Oh, I was going to say, as part of the presentation of the South, particularly in the early scenes, the music and the lighting and all of the flowers and the greenery and the soft accents and the formal manners, the pre-war South is presented as incredibly idyllic and romantic, obviously for the white people.
Well, yes.
Obviously. I did find it really interesting. The episode actually begins with whimsical music played over a scene of two small white girls in frilly dresses running around past a long line of slaves digging in the dirt. And it was a bit of a jarring juxtaposition.
I also, this sounds terrible, but I also found it amusing that you've got this line of black actors and actresses dressed in period costumes with a bunch of hose and tools. They're not
actually doing it.
They're
anything.
Not digging. They're just kind of tapping the ground with the tools way. But it's just like, Patrick Swayze is really good on a horse.
Yeah, I wasn't sure to begin with.
The horses in this are very...
The horses are great.
Very pretty, and they really, really know what they're
very
doing.
Very well trained, yeah. I wasn't too sure about Patrick Swayze's riding skills.
Really?
Initially.
Oh, okay.
In the first couple of shots of him on horse, he looked a little bit uncomfortable, but he did... he obviously settled into it, and...
Mm.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he just looks amazing throughout... You know, he wields a sword incredibly well. He knows how to hold himself because he's a dancer. Obviously, he's a trained dancer. Mm-hmm. So he's got incredible grace and incredible poise and incredible charisma.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, you know, really beautiful. I mean, he was the biggest target of my teenage obsession amongst celebrities.
Was he the one on your ceiling?
Yeah, he was the one that I had a giant poster of on the ceiling above my bed.
Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, I do like James Reed too. As I say, I it's a bit of a toss-up between George and Ori.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Ori wins, really. But I like George too.
I find it, as I say, I've said before, I find it interesting that James Reed just looks so much older than Patrick Swayze. What else do I have?
Going back to what you were saying about a lot of Northerners actually still being quite racist, there was mention, Corporal Bent, when he was talking to Ned, the guy
Corporal
from Ohio.
Bent is the
drill master at West Point.
Yes.
Mentioned that in Ohio there was a college where black and white students studied as equals.
But
which
is
really interesting in 1842.
He was totally scandalised.
Oh no, I mean he was really,
yeah,
not happy about it, but then he was the evil guy.
Yeah. I think evil's a strong word, but yeah.
Yes. Very vindictive. But yes, he was saying that it was a bad thing, but I find it interesting that that must have been a thing, even in 1842.
Well, I wish I could have looked up the dates, but there were certainly black people getting into places like Harvard relatively early.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mid-19th century, I think. Know. So when is this? This is
1842 to 44, first episode.
And the war is...
1861 to 65.
Yeah, I mean, I get the feeling that by that kind of... By the 1860s, that there were black people at the main American northern universities.
Okay.
And certainly you had people like... yes, obviously I can remember his name. I don't have to look it up in my notes at all. It's absolutely fine. Frederick Douglass. Certainly you had people like Frederick Douglass in the North publishing multiple newspapers being newspaper owners.
Okay.
So, you know, there was a lot of that stuff going on. Do we want to talk about anything else under diversity?
So about the women.
When... Ori takes what's her job? Madeline, back to the place where her father's at.
Mm.
And he says, I can't remember what the exact exchange of stuff is, but he says something like, can you do such and such a thing? And she's like, I guess. And then he says, well, it's settled then. So he just, you know, makes this decision for her.
Well, yes. I mean, it's 1842. But having said that, she talks about politics at the dinner table, and
several women do, actually.
Yes, and David Carradine's character, who is the moustache-twirling bad guy, looks surprised, and her father says, I encourage my daughter to read and question. She has an excellent mind.
And
he says,
a mind hardly seems necessary, and one has the face of an angel.
Yeah. He doesn't even say that. He says, a mind hardly seems necessary, Nicholas, when she has the face of an angel.
Oh,
so
wow.
He's not even talking to her.
Oh, wow.
He's talking to her dad.
I did not notice that.
Oh, yes. Oh, wow. I mean, he is very massively coded as evil because, you know, he has that kind of attitude. Then he whacks one of his slaves, backhands her across the face for spilling the tea, and threatens her if it happens again. Mm-hmm. And then the episode ends with him raping Madeline after their wedding. So,
which...
Yeah, no, you know, redeeming features for Justin.
I mean, I don't want to end the episode on a massive downer, but I was really impressed by that because I hypothesize that there was a huge amount of that going on at the time.
Oh, marital rape. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And to...
It's probably more of it goes on now than we'd like to think.
Almost certainly. But the fact that that was acknowledged as a thing...
Yeah.
That you essentially got married off to whoever your parents thought were most appropriate, and then... horrificness was going on behind closed doors and was never talked about.
And it was only because... declared illegal much more recently than you might want to think.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It is interesting because up until that point I'd been saying, you know, Madeline is presented as educated, intelligent, reasonably strong-minded, independent.
I like her, but it doesn't feel like she's in it very much.
And yet... Well, maybe, but... And yet... It demonstrates that despite all of those things, and having had quite an open-minded and lenient father up until the question of her marriage, she has no power.
Oh, no.
Once she's married to Justin, that's it.
Yeah.
She has to do what he says.
Yeah.
And submit to his treatment of her. And it's a similar thing with Mom Sally, because she's a black woman in the 1840s, and she is also presented as quite strong and forthright, and she has a very good relationship with Madeline, but she has no rights either. I mean, she's not a slave, she's a free woman, but as a servant to Madeline in Justin's house, does not end well for her, I'm afraid.
Oh.
So it's really interesting. I've only just kind of come up with this thing that they do have quite good, strong female characters, but it demonstrates that they have zero power.
But what's really interesting, I suspect, as we get further into the series, is the show demonstrates that at that period, and to a great lesser extent even now, it's all about power relationships. So even in West Point, you know, the Ori and George have no power compared to the people.
So they are subject to the will of their drill master, who is subject to the authority of the upperclassmen.
Yeah. So it's all about the power relationships. But what's really, really interesting is when you get...
Virgilia?
Frederick Douglass.
Oh, I was going to talk about Virgilia briefly.
I could go for it.
She's George's sister, who is the very strong abolitionist.
Kirstie Alley.
Kirstie Alley, yes. So at the dinner table, a reference is made that she's giving all of her allowance to the abolitionists, and the dad makes some kind of disparaging remark, and she goes, I'm a grown woman, I can do whatever I want with my money. And I'm like,
Not if he cuts your money off.
Well, no, but she has this... entitlement, this sense of entitlement because of the kind of family that she's grown up in, that she has an illusion of power that possibly is not really true.
Yeah, but what's really interesting is you get somebody like Frederick Douglass, who as a black man goes to the North and sets up his own newspapers and what have you, and says, I'm going to take this power myself. And, I'm not going to be, you know, subservient to people. I'm going to be my own guy. And so, you know, he effectively establishes his own power, I can say ex nihilo, which sounds remarkably pretentious, out of nothing. that, you know, he just becomes his own, you know, powerful self, which is something that, because he's almost kind of doing it in opposition to the norm, it's almost, this is going to sound really weird, but it's almost easier, certainly easier to demonstrate than if you were just one other white guy. Because if you're one other white guy and you want to get into a position of power, you have to kind of, you know, stand for political office or, you know, go and do something through an existing, you have to crawl your way up the existing power hierarchy. But if you're outside of the existing power hierarchy, you could just turn up and go, I'm my own guy. You need to pay attention to me because I'm doing stuff. And you have your own kind of power base that's totally separate to the existing one.
Yeah.
And you're much more of an obvious figure. So it's super interesting.
What would be interesting is to watch some more to see the development of the black characters and the introduction of these other people that you were talking about. Because in this first episode, there are three named black characters and they only serve a purpose to demonstrate the character of the white people. Because Mom Sally's purpose is to demonstrate that Madeline is a good Southerner. Nancy, who is the one who spills the tea, only serves the purpose to demonstrate that Justin is an evil Southerner. And Prime, who is one of the main plantation slaves, only serves the purpose to get whipped by the new overseer to demonstrate that Ori is going to stand up for the treatment of the slaves and that the that he has got an uphill struggle to persuade his father to modernise and be better.
Right.
That about wraps it up for this month's discussion. So it's time for the ratings. We use a standard 5-star rating system with half stars allowed. Dave, what is your rating for the first episode of North and South?
You know, very unusually, because, you know, I write a bit of a script or certainly a bunch of notes sometime before each show, I haven't thought about it.
Oh.
So,
snap decision.
So it is snap decision. I think I'm going to say 4.
Ah, okay, cool.
Partly because of the really nice horses, the really lovely steam train, the excellent props, the way that when Ori and Bent are doing practicing cutlass fighting, that even though it's obviously choreographed, it's very realistic, well done. They've got a good swordsman to come in. It's not just aiming at the sword, it's lots of aiming at the body. That was really good. So the whole way it's constructed is really good.
Yeah.
Patrick Swayze is a very attractive young man, but also, even though I think it lets the Southerners off in a lot of ways, it still has lots and lots of historical contemporary discussion and nuance. And I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, that impressed me too.
How about you?
Yeah, I'm going with 4. I'm going with 4 as well, for same reasons. So, next month is kind of tricky.
Hang on.
Oh.
Did you still love it?
I kind of did. I went back and forth, though, about whether I was going to watch any more of it, because I did really enjoy it more than I actually thought I would. And I was kind of, you know, quite keen to watch some more, but there's a hell of a lot of doom.
Oh.
Hell of a lot of doom in that series. I mean, that I think the first episode is the only happy sections, really.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be quite keen to watch more, specifically because I want to see Johnny Cash as John Brown. I've never seen Johnny Cash in anything, ever.
Yeah, interesting.
I've only ever seen music videos. I've never seen him actually acting.
Yeah.
And I'd really like to see that. And John Brown is a fascinating character because, on the one hand, the things that he believed in are largely right, morally right, in inverted commas, but on the other hand, the way that he approached things was often really bad.
Okay.
So he's a very interesting character. And I'm also super interested in seeing their portrayal of Frederick Douglass.
Wow.
Because he is, again, from what limited knowledge I have of American history, super interesting character. Taught himself to read when he was in his 20s, became... Wow. You know, an intellectual and a speaker and an owner of newspapers and all this kind of stuff, but is also incredibly arrogant. So, really interesting to see how he's portrayed.
Okay, well, you know,
But on the other hand,
not averse.
But on the other hand, the episodes are an hour and a half each.
True. Yes.
So that's really hard.
Well, you know, we'll see how we go.
Mm.
But yes, next month is a bit tricky because I'm still hoping that we might resurrect the Black Sails episode with Quizman Jack.
Mm-hmm.
We've also got a friend coming over tomorrow who's never seen My Neighbor Totoro, who may be interested in doing a podcast episode on that, but we're not quite sure. Do you want to say what your next selection is going to be? Or
no.
We're just going to go completely off the rails and leave it open as to what next episode is. Sorry, listeners, no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, that's the end of the episode of We Shall Love It Tomorrow. Many thanks to Cambo for our theme music. And thank you to all of our listeners. If you like the show, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you have any comments, or if you want to tell us about a time you shared some media you love and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can email us at willyoustilloveit@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Now remember that if you are keen, you can buy our merch at bit.ly/loveittomorrowpodcast, with hyphens where the spaces would be.
So please join us next month to find out what it is that we're actually talking about, because we don't know.
Hooray! Right.
Bye for now.
Thanks for the discussion. Bye for now.